You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell. Now, before I introduce today's excellent guest and also a report from the Fort Lauderdale International Boat Show, I would like to thank everybody once more for sticking with us and consistently downloading the podcasts. It felt like an absolutely extraordinary milestone to pass the 1 million download mark a few weeks ago. Of course, we're way past that now because thousands of you download the shows every day in more than 70 countries. The majority of our audience is in the United States, but we also have listeners in far-flung corners of the world, from islands in the middle of the Pacific Ocean to outposts on the edge of the Arctic Circle. Unusual places too, like Liechtenstein and Andorra, but mostly huge numbers of you in San Francisco, Chicago, New York, London, Sydney, Tokyo even. Can you believe we're big in Japan? It's a wonderful feeling. Thank you also for supporting our sponsors and our supporters. We've had really good feedback from those firms and organisations with ads running in our commercial breaks. An advert on Boat Radio really does work. For more information about Boat Radio and to find out how an advert for your firm could be heard more than 200,000 times every month, visit boatradio.tv. That's boatradio.tv. You will also hear there a selection of recent shows which play on a loop, on a constant audio stream. So thanks again. Okay, let's get down to today's business. Later in the programme, we'll hear from Beneteau's Jason Joyner. He sat down with Sarah O'Kelly at the Fort Lauderdale International Boat Show. They'll talk about motorboats, design trends, the boom in demand too for outboards on everything, even catamarans and trawlers. We'll hear what Jason had to say a little later in the programme. Before that, a modern mystery story. Now, it's not a mystery in the creepy Edgar Allan Poe sense of the term, but it does, I think, stray into Ellery Queen's arena because something about it just doesn't add up. In fact, quite a few things about this story just don't add up. Back at the beginning of May, two women called Jennifer and Tasha set sail from Hawaii on board Jennifer's boat, Sea Nymph. They were headed for Tahiti, and the trip should have taken a little under 3 weeks. Instead, well over 5 months later, the two women were rescued by the US Navy. They were drifting several hundred miles off the coast of Japan, which is around 5,000 miles off course. Family and friends had all but given up hope of seeing them alive again. Great, you think. Two women and their pet dogs rescued. It's a happy ending. Well, no, not exactly. It's certainly not an ending because the story rumbles on, and it's not entirely happy either because, quite frankly, a great many people simply do not believe Jennifer and Tasha's account of their ordeal. Well, my guest today is Linus Wilson. He is an accomplished sailor and a best-selling author of terrific sailing books. Many of you will know Linus from his popular podcast, Slow Boat Sailing, which I would recommend most highly. Others might know Linus from here, Boat Radio, because he was good enough to give us an interview last November. Linus, welcome back to Boat Radio.
Thank you.
This whole business of Jennifer and Tasha setting sail from Hawaii back in May, what was it that first made you, because I know you are, but what first made you suspicious about all of this?
Well, you know, I caught on to their story really quickly because I have a YouTube channel, the Slow Boat Sailing YouTube channel, and I had noticed there's a lot of rescues by the U.S. Coast Guard with people on sailboats with dogs. And they were on a sailboat. It wasn't by the U.S. Coast Guard, but it was by the U.S. Navy. They had dogs, and so I was like, oh, I could add them to this video that I was thinking about working on. And so I listened to their story, and a lot of other people listened to their story. They've been on all the, you know, the major networks in the U.S., ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, etc., etc., to tell their story. And I think the first impression that I had and a lot of other sailors had was, boy, they made some bad decisions. They shouldn't have sailed right into a storm right out of port. But I think as we kind of dug a little deeper into their story, a few things didn't add up. So the storm didn't add up. There was no evidence of that. And they said some wild things about sharks that just don't conform to anything we know about sharks.
I mean, let's go through their journey kind of stage by stage. They set off on May the 3rd, I think, this year, bound for Tahiti. They set sail from Hawaii. Now, on day one or two, and I've heard different accounts of this, and this is probably not down to the women, it's probably down to sort of poor journalism and various different media outlets interpreting what they say in different ways, but there was a storm. They were hit, they say, by a force 11 storm for 3 days, during the course of which Jennifer lost her cell phone overboard. And from that moment on, according to them, their luck just got worse and worse. But you check this, because as I think everybody listening to this will probably know, there are records of storms, you know, even much smaller and less fierce storms than that. But a force 11 storm is something to be reckoned with. So what did you find when you had a look?
So the first storm in the central North Pacific, which is what NOAA tracks. So NOAA tracks the hurricanes in the United States. They track the hurricanes in the U.S. and storms, so anything over 39 miles per hour. And the first one was in July 20th. And then I looked back at the wind speed record. So the way that you typically define a force 11 storm is 64 to 72 miles per hour sustained. And that's the storm one notch below a hurricane, and there were no winds in the Hawaii area of those speeds.
It's just not true. They cannot have been hit by, storm force 11 winds. They just can't have been.
Yeah, you know, they couldn't have been. I don't think Ms. Appel would be confused by that. So I think we have evidence that she's been sailing since 2008. You know, and I think she said something similar to that effect. So that I just don't think an experienced sailor as Ms. Appel was that would confuse that. But maybe, you know, offshore things look a little bigger. But, you know, she's kind of had contradictory statements even since then. She's been pressed by people like Matt Lauer on the Today Show. And she said, well, it was maybe due to catabatic gusts, but that wouldn't be consistent with a three-day storm. That would be consistent with a few gusts while she's passing by the islands. But, you know, you can't pass by that the islands for that long. That she said she was going between Hilo, Hawaii, and Maui, and the Alanui Haha Channel is just not that big. You couldn't sail through it for 3 days. You'd have to be well offshore.
Meteorologically and geographically, what she's saying is not true. But I want to make it clear that I'm not calling her a liar at all here. I just think she must be really very much mistaken about what happened and when it happened. But if we stick to her story, so let's say she did, you know, she left the, she set off for Tahiti, and a day or two into her journey, she was hit by a storm, which it looks like she's, you know, she's estimated the strength of this storm quite erroneously, quite badly, wrongly.
They hit that storm the first night out of Honolulu.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And then the first night out of Honolulu, there's still, on the way to Tahiti, they're still within striking distance of a number of Hawaiian islands, right? I mean, maybe my geography is not very good, but there are plenty of places they could have put in.
Yeah, and that's the question that people ask, you know, why didn't they put in? You know, and I think that her answer is that the keel of her boat is much bigger than we know her boat to be. So we have records of what her boat is. And people have interviewed the former owners of the boat. And so it's a Stratz and Jinks 45, which is similar to the Morgan 40. It's made of the same Morgan 40 molds. And she says her boat has a much bigger keel than the Morgan 40 or the Stratz and Jinks boat because they made alterations. But you know, I'm skeptical if that's the case.
So she's saying that they've, for some reason, the keel on her boat has been lengthened or elongated or in some way changed so that the boat now draws, you know, much deeper than the boat did when it was originally purchased. And she is saying that because of that, she couldn't pull in to the various harbours and marinas that she was passing by during this storm.
It should be a 7.5 foot depth, and depth includes both the freeboard and the keel. She says it's an 8.5 keel, but the Coast Guard document says 7.5, so that means that she'd have a 5 to 5.5 foot keel, giving her about 2 feet of freeboard. Just from my eye, it looks like the freeboard on her boat is about the same as the keel. The keel's not a ton deeper than that, so I'm not sure that it's been altered.
Even if that were the case, there are plenty of places that she could have put in during or after the storm. She could have avoided this bad weather.
Of course, she could anchor any number of places. There were a lot of anchorages she could have gone to. If she had an 8.5-foot keel, maybe there were some marinas she couldn't get into, but she could anchor outside the marinas or pick up a mooring ball outside the marinas. So.
And at this point, of course, she was well within radio calling distance of plenty of places that could have helped them out if they were in trouble, right?
You know, I think one of the big criticisms about the rig is that she did not have a broken mast in the traditional sense of saying that. Her mast was upright. Her sails, from the pictures, look like they're not badly ripped or anything. So that, you know, maybe the rig was not in top shape and she couldn't sail with full sail, but it wasn't like she was dismasted. So it's not like the situation that many of the, you know, Southern Ocean sailors find themselves in, where they have to sail with a jury rig and they put up a whisker pole and still they find port within 5 months.
You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell. My guest today is sailor Linus Wilson of the very successful Slow Boat Sailing podcast. We are talking about the inconsistencies in the story told by Jennifer and Tasha, the two women rescued by the US Navy after drifting at sea for more than 5 months. It's time for a quick break. We will be back in a couple of minutes.
Bonnie Lass Charters is Mallorca's number one experience.
Bonnie Lass is a 57-foot converted fishing boat. She was built in 1949 as a herring ring netter in Scotland, and now she's set up for the Mediterranean. Apart from just relaxing in the sunshine on the deck, there's paddleboarding and any kind of exploring you can imagine up along the north coast of Mallorca here, quite often with Maggie the dog in tow as well. Bonnie Lass Charters is unique because no charter is really the same. We work really hard to make it the perfect day for each individual client. To be able to go out and enjoy the day with the guests on board is just fantastic.
For more information and to make a booking, visit bonnielasscharters.com.
My name is Matt Rutherford. I am the only person in history to have circumnavigated the Americas nonstop. I've sailed alone across the Atlantic twice. I've crossed the Pacific. I've sailed through the Bering Sea and around Cape Horn. I understand the challenges you will face trying to accomplish your blue water dreams. And I know how important it is to have the right boat. Whether buying a blue water boat or selling your blue water boat, Rogue Wave Yacht Sales has the experience to make that happen. Email me at matt@roguewaveyachtsales.com.
This is Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell. My guest today is Linus Wilson from the Slow Boat Sailing podcast. Like me, Linus was quite suspicious of the story told by the two women who drifted at sea for more than 5 months before being rescued off the Japanese coast a couple of weeks back. Now, Linus, they were sailing from Hawaii to Tahiti, so they embarked on what is essentially a three-week voyage. If you take it slowly, it's a three-week voyage, right? But it seems that they took plenty of food with them. And a lot of people have flagged, particularly I think people who don't who haven't sailed, haven't made any sort of long voyages on board a boat, they flagged it as suspicious that the women have survived for, I say 5 months, but it's the best part of 6 months with the food that they took with them on only what should have been a three-week voyage. But in actual fact, this is not something that they should be criticised about, because it's not that unusual, is it, to carry a lot of dehydrated food when you're heading into open ocean. I mean, that's just common sense, right?
Yeah, I that's one of the least suspicious things of the story. You know, I think generally people do stock up on a lot of food, if nothing else, to save money, because in the islands, food tends to cost a little bit more than it does, you know, in the U.S., so it's if anything, a money-saving thing and a convenience thing, even if you're not worried about being lost at sea or anything like that.
They'd filled the boat with dried food like pasta and noodles and that sort of thing, because presumably they were going to eat that while they were traveling around Tahiti and the islands of Polynesia. So we can dismiss that aspect of the story, I think. But I thought these women were being treated unfairly. I mean, a great many armchair experts have taken to social media to criticize and in many cases sort of outright call them liars. But then I read, and this was not in the tabloids, it was in the much more respected media outlets, I read that the women claimed to have been attacked more than once, in fact, by monster sharks up to 30 feet long. What exactly are they claiming?
They say that there was a 40 to 50 foot shark that snapped into someone else's boat. This is not a direct quote, but it's pretty close. And 40 to 50 foot is the quote. There are no predatory sharks anywhere near that long. And then they talked about 20 to 30 foot tiger sharks. And tiger sharks have never been observed over 17 feet long. So there's really no evidence that there are sharks as big as they're talking about. So that's definitely a fish story, which is, you know, I think it's hurt their credibility. You know, I personally think it's really irresponsible. So one of the things that I do with my daughters, who loves all kinds of animals, is we read books of all about all kinds of animals, and you know, one of the animals that is always endangered are sharks, and it's very few people are hurt by sharks every year, and far fewer are killed, but there are, you know, thousands of sharks killed by man, in part by ignorance and part by convenience. And that really hurts our ocean ecosystems.
And also, I mean, like you said, there's simply no credibility to this. I mean, they claim that they were stalked for 5 days by a group of these giant monster tiger sharks between 20 and 30 feet long. And then that these sharks tried to bite their boat. And one shark expert, in fact, it was George Burgess, no less, and he used to run the Florida program for shark research. He is one of the most respected shark scientists in the world, and he said that there's no credibility to this at all. He said their description is like something a four-year-old would say. I mean, he didn't use the word nonsense, but that's basically what he was saying. So it's very, very strange stuff, and I can't help but think maybe they were hallucinating, or I just don't know. I just don't know. We could speculate all day. But the weird thing, the most weird thing that I think about this story is that they had an EPIRB on board, but they didn't use it. And we should explain, you know, and I know, and anyone who has a boat probably knows that an EPIRB, it stands for Emergency Position Indicator Radio Beacon. Basically, you lift the flap, you press the button, and it sends out a distress signal with your precise location. That signal will be picked up by a satellite network almost immediately. The satellite network is operated under an international maritime agreement between lots of different nations who own and run the satellites. And if you press that button, the emergency services worldwide will be notified of your exact location, and they will get you very quickly. I mean, in fact, even if you're in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, they will get to you within 24 hours. What have they said about the EPIRB on board the boat?
Their reasoning for not pulling the EPIRB that Ms. Apple has consistently said since it's become public is that she did not feel like she was within sinking within 24 hours. And she didn't think it was, even though she claims they were unable to touch land and they were adrift and they were scared of sharks and all this other stuff, and they're thousands and thousands of miles off course. They didn't pull the EPIRB because they still had food and water, and they weren't going to die within 24 hours. But that leads to a problem in the story, is that, you know, when they did call for rescue, why did they call for rescue? And their claim is that the fishing boat that they waved down, so they were sending off flares, and they sent off 10 flares, and they said they were waving a white flag and also calling pan-pan distress signals to every passing ship that they saw. And the one ship that stopped was this 75-foot Taiwanese fishing vessel who agreed to give them a tow to the nearest island. And so their story is that the tow was really awful. And in more recent statements, Ms. Apple said they were trying to kill them, even though they helped coordinate the rescue. They gave them a free tow. They stopped fishing for them.
Sorry, Linus, can I just interrupt there? Jennifer Apple has said, you've heard her say this, or you've seen her say this on television or on the radio, that the Taiwanese fishermen who saved their necks, basically, were a danger to them. She was saying they were a threat to them.
Right.
This just gets stranger and stranger.
Yeah, she's alleging that the fishing boat rammed them several times. So she's got some videos up on her YouTube channel. You can look at them. I didn't see any evidence that there was structural damage to their boat. I would think with an open ocean tow that there's a very high probability that the cleats will be pulled off, that all kinds of problems will happen with that, because there's all kinds of problems that do typically happen with an open ocean tow, especially with a larger vessel towing a smaller, slower vessel. But I didn't see that in her video, but she claims that a lot of things broke on her boat. But, you know, if you're taking a tow, you can always cut the tow line.
You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell. My guest today is sailor Linus Wilson of the very successful Slow Boat Sailing podcast. We're talking about the two American women, Jennifer and Tasha, who aboard SV Sea Nymph were rescued by the US Navy after drifting at sea for more than 5 months. It's time for another quick break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Our aim at Street Invest is to put a trustworthy adult into the lives of street children so that they can support them in creating the most positive paths for their lives in the future. We work around the world, working on the street with the children where they are. For such a large group of children, the amount of funding available is tiny. Really, the funding that keeps organisations like Street Invest going comes from individual donors. Street children are the most abused, neglected, violated children, yet they're also the most resourceful, responsive, and resilient children that we could have the honour of working with.
For more information or to make a donation, visit streetinvest.org.
I'm John Herlig. In Postcards from Sea, I tell stories of my travels aboard Ave Del Mar, my 1967 Rawson cutter. I deal with serious nautical issues like how to sail your mast into a tree on a canal, what kind of incense best covers the aroma of kimchi fermenting on your boat, or whether or not I can beat a leukemia patient at a video game. It's simply the story of my life, and my life happens to take place on a 50-year-old sailboat with no particular destination in mind. I hope you'll join me and some of the wonderful characters I meet as I travel for my show, Postcards from Sea, every other Monday here on Boat Radio.
Time goes forward, go and catch your jet. You will find your moment. Time goes forward, stay and have a sniff. Let's dream about the future.
You listen to Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell, and my guest is Linus Wilson from the Slow Boat Sailing podcast. We're talking about the rescue of two women, two sailors at sea with their two dogs aboard SV Sea Nymph. They set sail from Hawaii in May and then were picked up a couple of weeks ago after drifting essentially for the best part of 6 months at sea. And they were picked up about 800 or 900 miles off the coast of Japan, about 5,000 miles off course. They claim that their rig, their mast, and also their engine was damaged in a storm just one day out of Hawaii. But there are all sorts of mysteries and inconsistencies attached to their story. Now, they took loads of food, but that makes sense because they were going to be traveling for quite a long time, and it's expensive and difficult to get certain food as you travel around the islands of the Pacific. But that's not why they survived. They survived, actually, Linus, I guess, because they had water. So they had a water maker. So obviously, although the engine room, they say, I think, was flooded during the storm, the boat's batteries and electrical system and solar panels, crucially, were working, right?
That's right. So their wind generator was working, and I think that they had solar panels, I believe, that was working too. And they said they had a Katadyn water maker. I do have Katadyn water makers on my boat. They run off 12 volts, or you could hand pump them. They usually come with at least the smaller versions come with an optional hand pump too. So that's you won't use a lot of electricity.
So listen, there are obviously a lot of holes in this story. We could speculate all day about them sort of losing their minds at sea and getting too much sunshine and not enough food and, I don't know, maybe drinking all the rum on board and imagining they were being attacked by a ship. I have absolutely no idea. And I want to emphasize again that I'm not calling them liars at all. I think they've been quite mistaken and they've made some bad decisions, but I'm not saying that they're liars. I haven't spoken to them themselves, and hopefully you and I will get to speak to them at some point. But there are so many holes in the story. It's so unusual. What do you make of it all?
I don't think we know anything about the story, to be honest. I mean, I haven't even seen verification that May 3rd was their start date, right? Besides what Ms. Apple and Ms. Fuiava have said. And because their story is kind of just so weird, all this stuff about not being able to stop at these ports or that port for reasons that don't make any sense to most sailors, and the fact that they were found thousands and thousands of miles off course, I don't think we can assume anything about their story at this point. You know, the Coast Guard says they're not investigating this matter. And so without somebody looking at their GPS signals or credit card records or sat phone records, we're going to have to take Ms. Appel and Ms. Fuiava's word about their route unless somebody else saw them in a particular place at a particular time.
Well, Linus, thank you so much for talking to Boat Radio today.
Okay.
That's Linus Wilson of Slow Boat Sailing. And Linus is the author of three sailing books. And Linus, you're still on the line, so do tell me if I get this wrong. They are How to Sail Around the World Part-Time, Slow Boat to Cuba, and Slow Boat to the Bahamas. You can find them all on Amazon.com. Go to Amazon, and I'm not going to give you all the long addresses. Just enter Linus Wilson into the search box. They're best-selling books. They're bestsellers for a reason. It's because they're good. You'll find more information about Linus and his exploits at slowboatsailing.com. And you will find the Slow Boat Sailing podcast, which is great, on iTunes and all of the other podcaster websites. So, Linus, for the time being, I mean, I'm going to try to get in touch with Jennifer and Tasha, and all four of us, you, me, and those two, we can talk together on Boat Radio next time. But in the meantime, thank you so much.
Hi, this is Bob Bitchin from Cruising Outpost Magazine, and I love listening to Boat Radio.
Now, boaters and boat industry professionals flocked to Fort Lauderdale at the beginning of this month for the 58th annual Fort Lauderdale International Boat Show. The show is huge, one of the biggest in the world, with around 1,000 exhibitors, imagine that, and more than 100,000 visitors. In fact, probably only the Dusseldorf show here in Europe, which is known as Boot, because Boot obviously is German for boat, it's known as Boot, and it's the only one, I think, in the world that's bigger in scale. Now, Beneteau always has a great display at these events, with new models and demonstrations and innovations galore. The sail and powerboat maker is well over a century old, and although most of its manufacturing is done in France, it also has a factory in Marion, South Carolina, in the United States. Now, Beneteau sailboats have long dominated the US market, but its US powerboat division is actually relatively young. The US powerboat sales team is headed up by Jason Joyner, and he took time out of his busy Fort Lauderdale schedule to chat to Sarah O'Kelly.
Beneteau builds all their boats in Europe on the powerboat side currently. And in order to build anything in Europe, they actually have much stricter controls on air pollution, on the resin ventilation, and what we do with the ventilation of the factories. So our operations are actually very very much tighter than most U.S. operations. That's on the construction side. On the use side of the boat, you know, sailboats, I think we get a free pass for that because, as far as I know, the wind is still free. But on the powerboat side, you know, fuel prices are what they are, and it hasn't been this real push to hybrid boats like we might have thought when the fuel prices were quite a bit more expensive, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. We have dabbled in hybrid technology, we want to embrace it. It's just not quite there yet to move big boats through the water efficiently. It will come, though.
What about solar? I'm not just, you know, basing it on fuel price, but just in general for the environment.
The funny thing about solar is every couple years, the solar panels are twice as good as they used to be, right? So when Beneteau builds a boat into a product cycle, we try to only put options on the boats that have sustainability for a number of years. Solar panel, we put on a Trawler 50 as a standard option and build it into the construction of the boat will be very much outdated in a couple years. So it's very tricky for us to get too far down that road without the technology kind of flattening out in terms of progression.
Do you see any trend coming up in 2018? Do you see anything that just stands out that you feel like Beneteau are going to change and head in that direction?
Well, the easy out to that question is outboards. Outboards are popping up on everything. Catamarans, boats that should never have had outboards. People have asked us to put outboards on our 35,000-pound Swift trawlers. It doesn't make sense for most of the boats that we build and sell today, but it's something to definitely keep an eye on. I think that one of the very interesting evolutions right now is what Suzuki is doing, for instance, with their dual prop outboard. That's a whole new ball game because you've got all that prop area in the water grabbing more water, making boats move through the water more efficiently than putting a big horsepower 3-4 blade prop outboard on the back of a boat. Yes, you can take them out of the water and you don't have the maintenance issues, but yeah.
Is that the reason behind people wanting the outboards is speed and maintenance?
Well, top end speed, there's some gains on outboards, but efficiency, not quite. Packaging is interesting because you have more storage space in boats, but really, you know, in inland lakes, in freshwater bodies of water, you know, there's still a place for inboard or inboard outboard propulsion. Florida outboard has a lot of benefits.
So what boat is flying out the door at the Fort Lauderdale International Boat Show? Which one is seems to be a favorite?
Well, our in Florida, typically the crowd is a little younger, a little bit more focused on speed. So as expected, our Gran Turismos are selling quite well. It's a boat that there's in the ranges that we offer probably the most competitive in terms of different brands out there that sell boats like ours. But we seem to be doing pretty well from our sales figures and what we see over the next couple weeks.
How big is the Turismo?
The Gran Turismos for us start at 40 feet and go to 50 feet, and we've got three very distinct boats in that size range.
And they're pretty wide too, right?
Wide?
Yeah.
Not as wide as some of the U.S. Contemporaries, but and part of that is one of Beneteau's focuses on efficiency, and every inch you make a boat wider, there's more drag because there's more wetted surface. So we really try to optimize just how wide a boat needs to be and still move through the water.
So how comfortably will your 40-foot Turismo hold? How many people?
Well, the boat will sleep six comfortably. There's two distinct cabins. But a Gran Turismo is much more focused on the day boating aspect of it, the entertainment space. So our cockpits are huge. There's seating and lounging out on the front of the boat. So it's more of a party boat, if you will. And again, Florida, right? So people tend to like that sort of thing down here.
So it seems like, from what I'm getting, it's the smaller versions that are going faster right now than the bigger ones.
And the bigger boats, it's more of a use game. Having said that, yes, our 40-foot boat is a top seller for us, and again, it continues to sell for us at this show. So to answer your question, yes, it is going well, but every once in a while we're doing 50, 60 footers too.
All right, Justin, thank you very much for your time. That was awesome.
It was my pleasure.
Jason Joyner of Beneteau's U.S. Powerboat Division. He's the head of sales in the U.S. Powerboat Division, and he was chatting to Sarah O'Kelly from Skipper's Review. And if you don't know what Skipper's Review is, it's a fantastic review and recommendation site for boaters. It's worldwide, but it particularly applies to boaters in the United States. You can go onto the Skipper's Review website, and let's say you're looking for, I don't know, you want your outboard motor fixed. So you can type in outboard motor servicing, put in your zip code, and it'll give you all the nearest companies to where you are or where your boat is. And there will be reviews from your peers, from other boat users who've used these services, and they'll tell you whether it was good, bad, or they'll give it a review, a number of stars. You know how these things work. And it's a really good idea. And Sarah came up with it. And she's also a boater. She has a Boston Whaler, I know, and she goes whizzing around Pompano Beach in Florida. But that was Sarah O'Kelly of Skipper's Review talking to Jason Joyner of Beneteau's US Powerboat Division. That's all from me for this time. Thank you for listening to Boat Radio.
Bonny Lass Charters is Mallorca's number one experience.
Bonny Lass is a 57-foot converted fishing boat. She was built in 1949 as a herring ring netter in Scotland, and now she's set up for the Mediterranean. Apart from just relaxing in the sunshine on the deck, there's paddleboarding and any kind of exploring you can imagine up along the north coast of Mallorca here, quite often with Maggie the dog in tow as well. Bonny Lass Charters is unique because no charter is really the same. We work really hard to make it the perfect day for each individual client. To be able to go out and enjoy the day with the guests on board is just fantastic.
For more information and to make a booking, visit bonnylasscharters.com.